Welcome to Eugeria, broadcasting live from Business Radio X Studios. Eugeria is a Greek word meaning health of body and mind in aging individuals. Eugeria Radio is a weekly show celebrating the heroes that contribute to the Eugeria of our elderly and disabled population. Now joining us in the studio are your hosts, Sam Grass and Brad Culp.
Good morning. It's June 18th. Couple of days of spring left to go, only a few. Kind of feels like summer already. I got Sam and Kevin in the studio with me this morning. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning. How you guys been?
Doing well, thank you. How are you?
I am doing absolutely well. The mixed doubles tennis season started, so I'm out doing that every weekend.
That's very good. You find that enjoyable?
I do find that enjoyable.
Huh. I think it's probably more enjoyable than playing golf.
I don't know. I've played mixed doubles, and I'm not the right temperament to be playing mixed doubles, I can tell you.
You haven't seen my golf games.
Well, Kevin's not married yet, so mixed doubles is fine till you get married, and then once you get married, you can't play with your wife.
I already know that I can't play with my girlfriend. She wanted to join the team, and that was an interesting conversation.
Well, I'll tell you, one particular mixed double match, and I didn't say anything. I got mad at myself because I hit some bad shots and I was upset with myself. Well, long story short, that translated to my partner that she cried. And I'm saying, wait a minute. All I'm trying to do is win the game here. I'm not, you know, and so I said, okay, I'm done. I'm not playing anymore.
Yeah. I can understand that. Yeah.
All I wanted to do was win, and I was upset that I wasn't playing well. I was upset with myself, and somehow that was interpreted incorrectly.
Well, yesterday I did not play golf, so I just thought I'd let you know that.
I didn't think you were. I didn't think you were going to.
And just a shout out to all those that supported the Friends of Gwinnett Senior Services. Friends of Gwinnett yesterday at the golf tournament. We had about 80 players. It was a great turnout. Despite the weather, we pretty much got the round in.
You got through, right?
We had to shut it down about two holes early, but there were enough holes that were completed to be able to get the tournament in. So,
anyone win the hole in one?
No, nobody won the hole in one. But, and in 4 years of doing it, we haven't seen that.
I'd like to witness that. I'd like to do that. Yeah. When I'm talking about witnessing.
It would be fun to watch. That's for sure. Well, a couple of weeks ago, we started a topic on care transitions and reducing readmissions into hospitals, and we're going to wrap that up this time, or at least that's the intent. Assuming we have enough time to wrap it up, but we are going to come back to that topic and discuss it a little bit further today. So, by way of review, care transitions is just managing the transition of a patient from one environment to another. And the reason that this is a hot topic of conversation is that Medicare has been measuring hospitals looking at certain key diagnoses with respect to their 30-day readmits, and they're starting to penalize these institutions for admits over and above a certain standard. So what we've been talking about is how we can help as a home care company and as other senior service providers in the industries. How can we help hospitals reduce their readmits and why that's a good idea? Obviously, the hospitals think it's financially a good idea because they don't want to get dinged. But over and above that, it's a good idea because if we can keep people out of the hospital, we can keep them safer, healthier, happier in their homes.
And just one point of reference for our listeners, there's a statistic that says that 1 in 6, 21.4, almost 25%, of Medicare beneficiaries that are discharged from a hospital or readmitted within 30 days. That is an unbelievable number if you really stop and think about it.
And it's an even more staggering number when you translate that into dollars,
right,
which is close to $20 billion, which, of course, you and I pay for in our taxes.
And then to make it personal for the client and the caregivers, we all know that the worst place to be when you're sick is a hospital. So obviously in that situation, we're trying to affect the quality of life for these Medicare recipients.
So we want to review a little bit. What we had talked about last time were some general ideas about how to keep people safer and healthier in their homes. And today we're going to get more specific and talk about each of the four diagnoses that are being measured by the Center for Medicaid and Medicare. But before we do that, we wanted to go back through just some general principles. And there are four pillars as it relates to care transitions that can positively impact keeping people safe and at home. And the first one is the ability to self-manage medications. And as we were discussing last time, when there is a transition out of a hospital, often there's a change in medication. And we were stressing the idea that it's critically important to evaluate those changes in medication, make sure that the new prescriptions are being observed, but also to make sure that somebody was looking at the entire mix of medications that are together and what's being taken, and make sure there's no contraindications.
And the driving issue there is of the 21.4%, 22% readmissions, two-thirds of those readmissions have to do with medication, interaction, improperly taking. So basically, in short, you're speaking of 14 out of 100, if I got my numbers right, people discharged are going to be readmitted because of poor medication management.
Yeah, that's a staggering statistic, and you know a lot of people don't realize it, but over-the-counter vitamins and drugs
right.
can also contraindicate with prescribed
right.
medications, and so it's really important that you're talking to your pharmacist about all your medications,
yeah.
not just the prescribed medications, but you know what other vitamins you might be taking, what other supplements from the general nutrition center you might be taking. And that really leads into the next point, which is making sure that a discharged patient gets out to see their primary care physician within, they're saying within the first 30 days, but you know we're really arguing hard for getting out within that first week or so and getting back to your primary care physician so that A, the primary care physician can review the discharge plan that the patient came out of the hospital with, but you know more importantly, so that they can review that medication regimen and make sure that everything that has previously been prescribed is now still valid.
And it's very important for the patient, client, or the caregivers to understand that the responsibility onus is on them. They need to go to their primary care physician and push through he reviewing the discharge summary, he, the primary care physician, or she, the primary care physician, reviewing the new regimen of medication and making certain that what they are doing is in compliance with what the discharge facility has put forth.
And this is where the primary caregiver really comes in, because not every doctor out there is familiar with care transitions. Certainly any geriatric physician would
right.
be familiar with
right.
it, but there may be clients that have physicians out there that are just general practitioners
right.
that really aren't up to speed on what care transitions is all about. And so, as you say, the onus is on the patient or the patient's family
mm-hmm.
to make sure that that the doctor's paying attention, that the doctor understands what he or she needs to be looking at. Now, I want to skip the third pillar for a moment and go to the fourth, because we're going to come back to the third pillar, and that's what we're going to spend a lot of time talking about today. But the fourth pillar then is having a personal health record that is portable and that is comprehensive. So what we're talking about is a health record that is listing the medications that are being taken. It's listing any allergies. It's got maybe advanced directive information on it. It may have doctor's instructions, history of major illnesses and surgeries and whatnot. In addition to that, though, it's intended to be kind of an ongoing record of the care that a client or a patient is receiving. And that's important as we start to look at the specific red flag symptoms that we want to watch for post-discharge. So it's going to be a little booklet. You know, some home health providers have published booklets. There are booklets that are online that have been published by Dr. Coleman, who is kind of the author of this initial care transitions research. But really important that this becomes an ongoing record. So, for example, it could be recording weight every day. It could be recording fluid input and output. But again, this is something that most people aren't very good at. Most people aren't good at keeping records, and they need somebody to be their conscience. And that's where that primary caregiver right. comes in.
I mean, it's difficult. It's difficult for the end user to sit down and create this documentation and to keep it up to date. It seems as if in today's society, it comes down to the end user in everything. You have to be proficient in everything, which obviously becomes cumbersome. It's difficult. So, but yet, once you get started, it's imperative. I mean, and one of the things that I think the general public doesn't understand is that, I'm going to be careful here, but there's really no single source that a particular physician can go to obtain your complete medical records. Contrary to what is the general population believes, there is not the interface of all these practicing physicians. Now, the reason why is what I don't want to get into, but it's not there yet.
And it's important to follow these things. And so I'll talk about the third pillar now, and that is knowing what the warning signs or the red flag symptoms are, and how to respond to them, and families might be thinking, well, what can I really do? I mean, if I see this, then maybe they're going to end up in the hospital anyway. But, you know, I kind of liken it to, last Sunday I was out grilling and I had a big, thick piece of meat on the grill. And the difference between done and overdone is about 60 seconds.
Yeah.
And before it's overdone, you can take it off the grill and it's going to taste good. But you let that extra 60 seconds elapse and, you know, it's overdone. It doesn't taste good. And, you know, so everybody's heard about, you know, for example, this with a stroke, how time is so important. And, you know, this is really no different because, you know, you're going along every day and everything's fine. Your symptoms are under control. You're taking your medication. You know, your weight is steady. And then one day you see that maybe you're retaining a little fluid or you've gained a few extra pounds. If you can get to the doctor and get an adjustment in your medications or in your treatments, there's a good chance you can prevent a hospital visit.
It is vitally important that the listening audience understands this. And as Brad just used his, I have my own. It's like your car. And I know people think I'm stupid, but medicine's much the same. Obviously, the what you're working on is different, but it's the same. The check engine light goes on in your car. There's the red flag. You ignore it. You have to put a new engine in, or if you tend to it, you've got an oil change and an oil filter. The same goes on with the human body, the very same.
Yeah, that's right. Actually, the check engine light these days gives you a little bit of time. You know, back in the old days, you get that check engine or oil light on, and you've only got moments before that engine seizes up, but you know, it's critical to pay attention to the warning signs. So before we get specifically into the four diagnoses that are currently being measured, we want to talk about, given the four pillars, what is it that a caregiver can do, and in fact, what is Griswold Home Care doing to incorporate components of the model into the care we provide? And, you know, so the first thing we're doing is we're trying to visit our clients in the hospital before they're discharged. So if we can have an opportunity to sit down with the discharge planner or with the nurse or even with the doctor to talk about the anticipated outcomes of post-discharge care, we've got a much, much better chance of getting a caregiver out there that's capable of providing the care needed, that's capable of watching and knowing exactly what to watch for.
And the point that you do this, where you intercede, what point in the process is going to be different. It's going to be different for every patient. It's going to be different for every hospital or discharge planner. It's going to be different for every caregiver, whether it be on the skilled level or non-skilled level. So you've got to, everything is based upon the uniqueness of the situation.
So if we can't get to the hospital before a client's discharged, what we can do is ensure that the discharge instructions are clear and well documented, that they're somewhere where the family can find them and observe them, and in fact our caregivers can also participate in carrying out the discharge plans. Next thing that's critical is being the client's conscience and getting them to that primary care physician within the first week or two of discharge. So critical, and a lot of times people will say, well, I feel fine. I really don't need to go to the doctor. And, you know, there really needs to be somebody, some family caregiver or professional caregiver that's saying, I know you feel fine, but we need to just go check in with the doctor.
And a very simple case or example is someone with congestive heart failure. They gain 3 pounds of, or they retain 3 pounds of water. They don't feel bad, but that is the beginning of a big problem. And measuring that weight consistently is going to be that red flag that's going to give you the time before the engine seizes up.
Exactly. And that's the next critical piece to this, is making sure that we are documenting everything that's going on in the home. You know, particularly in these cases of discharge from one of these four diagnoses, making sure that the activities each day are documented, that any symptoms are documented. I mean, it could be as simple as, you know, mom had a great day today. There's no swelling. There's no weight gain. And, you know, she feels like she can breathe.
Right.
Very, very simple. But just being able to document that on a daily basis and even note small changes could be critical. And then finally, making sure that those changes are communicated to the appropriate people. So if you've got home health in there, make sure that the home health nurse knows. If there's a caregiver in there, we want our caregivers to communicate with us so that we can communicate with the home health or with the family or with the doctor. But communication is critical in this. So what are the four symptoms? What are the four conditions? What are the four diagnoses that we're looking at today?
Well, the first obviously is myocardial infarction, which is basically a heart condition. The second would be congestive heart failure. The third would be COPD, which is a chronic obstruction, airway obstruction. And the last would be pneumonia, which everyone's familiar with. So these are the four conditions that we and Medicare and the acute medical environment are looking at. It's the beginning. This list is going to grow. It's obvious. It's already started to do so, but this is where we are. So what we're doing with Griswold is that we have recognized, or we have researched and been given information about telltale signs, those red flags to look at and to be observed in the home as it relates to these four conditions. So what we want to do is go through some telltale signs briefly of each condition, and then we'll relate that to how we, Griswold, are going to interact and action, take action on that.
So we'll start with a heart attack. And, you know, heart attack versus congestive heart failure, a heart attack is a sudden blockage of a coronary artery caused by a blood clot, typically, and an injury to the heart muscle, which is going to cause severe pain or pressure in the chest. And that's different from congestive heart failure, in that congestive heart failure is a process over the course of time.
It's a weakening of the heart
muscle. The
weakening
and the degeneration of the heart and its ability to pump blood. So with a heart attack, most people know the symptoms of a heart attack. You know, pain in the chest or shortness of breath, you know, maybe some numbness of the extremities, you know, irregular heartbeat, cold, clammy skin, that sort of thing. When somebody has a heart attack and then they're discharged, you know, there's certainly an opportunity for another heart attack. And so basically just understanding the symptoms of what a heart attack looks like in the first place is critical for a caregiver or a family member. So in terms of how to care for someone that's had a heart attack, what are some of the things that we can do to help a client recover and make sure they don't have another one?
Well, obviously, our caregivers are going to be trained and instructed about, as Brad just spoke of, the symptoms, and she's going to record as she does that. That's the important thing, is documenting. And as she does so, she recognizes that there is a shallow shortness of breath right now. So what action should she take? Well, we are immediately instructing and training our caregivers to pick up the phone, communicate, over-communicate. If we become a pest, then fine, we're doing our job, but we're going to communicate. And we're going to communicate that to the appropriate source. And that depends upon, again, the situation. If there is a skilled agency, home agency involved, that's who we're going to communicate with. We're going to call the appropriate source, whether it be the clinician, the nurse, the physical therapist, or the office, whoever. And we're going to say, hey, by the way, Miss Jones, we just noticed that, you know, her breathing pattern has changed. It's short, it's shallow. She's feeling a little dizzy. Obviously, that's going to hopefully set off some bells and whistles, alarms at that location. And they're going to say, okay, call 911 or our nurse will be there. We're not going to be practicing medicine. We're going to be following the instructions of the hospital or of the skilled agency.
So in terms of caring for the heart attack patient, though, one of the things that's going to be critical, two things that are critical. One is exercise, and the recommendation is that a patient walk daily, and they're gradually increasing their distance as tolerated. And then the second thing is getting enough rest. So making sure that they're getting, you know, at least 7 hours of sleep overnight, and that they're taking some rest breaks throughout the day. So again, in terms of the documentation, in terms of the patient health record, what the family caregiver or the professional caregiver needs to be doing is monitoring the walking. You know, how far are they walking each day? Are they walking 100 feet? Are they walking 200 feet? Are they walking for 5 minutes? You know, are they walking for 7 minutes? You know, whether you're recording distance or time doesn't really matter. But the notion is let's make sure that we're tracking progress there, and then also tracking the sleep that they get. You know, in addition to that, nutrition, making sure that they're getting 3 or 4 smaller nutritious meals a day, and then taking a break after that. And then, of course, as we've already said, making sure that the client's taking their medication. So that's kind of heart attack. So let's talk about congestive heart failure for a minute. We already talked about the fact that congestive heart failure is more of a process, more of a degeneration of the heart muscle and its ability to pump blood through the body. So in terms of symptoms, the symptoms are a little bit different. And particularly coming out of the hospital, after being in the hospital for congestive heart failure, weight is a critical factor. So we've talked about this a little bit before, but getting on the scale every morning after you go to the bathroom, before you have breakfast.
It probably is the number one symptom, as well as the secondary would be swelling in the lower extremities.
So again, in terms of documentation, you know, we need to be documenting that weight every day, making sure that we're staying within tolerances. And, you know, depending on how much a person weighs to start with, you know, there might be kind of a caution zone, which is maybe 3 pounds, and there might be a red zone, which might be 5 pounds. And, you know, it's going to depend on how much the client weighs in the first place. But and in the normal course of a day, any person can be expected to, you know, gain plus or minus, gain or lose a couple of pounds. That's normal. You know, but by doing it the same time each day, you know, we're really, and it still could be impacted by what they ate the night before and what the input and the output is. And that's actually another area that needs to be watched. You know, input and output, you know, so if they're taking in fluids, are they outputting the same amount? If they're taking in food, are they also outputting food? And by keeping track of that, it's going to lead us to better decision making with respect to the weight gain.
So that one's pretty simple. The congestive heart failures, if we move on to COPD, which basically is a shortness, for lack of a better term, a shortness of breath, not able to get to breathe properly, to get the amount of oxygen that is required. The reasons that it develops are many, but it develops slowly over time. Based upon discharge, the one thing that there are a number of critical things, but one of the main issues that we need to be aware of is, as the patient comes out of the hospital back into the home environment, what is the situation at home? We need to eliminate any irritants that might affect the respiratory. Smoke, unfortunately, maybe dog and dog dander. It just depends upon the situation, but certainly a clean living environment is paramount.
And, you know, a lot of people equate COPD with emphysema,
right.
And that certainly is one of the primary two conditions that make up the family of diseases known as COPD. And that's often caused by smoking. And as we know, as we've seen over the course of time in our business, a lot of people come out and they light that cigarette right back up.
Yeah. And one of the things, and this would be true in my family if this were a situation with my wife, the extremes of hot and cold consumption of liquids has a tendency to irritate the respiratory system. So you need to be careful of that, as well as the consumption of dairy products. I mean, those are two simple things you can do to lessen the likelihood of a reoccurrence and a reemergence.
And the important thing here is, you know, and we've been talking about what can the caregivers do, and certainly we want the caregivers to encourage fluid intake, and that we want them to encourage good nutrition and watch for the hot and cold liquids. Those are the when you start thinking, well, how do they document that? I'd like to suggest that simply documenting reactions. So if you're documenting what the client eats, you can document the reaction to it. So,
right.
For example, you know, if they love dairy products, they love cheese or they love milk, you know, start them off with a little bit and document the reaction.
Right.
And if as you increase the intake of those items and it starts to create more phlegm or sputum, then you got to back off on it. But it's important to document, just like we were talking about before, document the exercise, document the sleep patterns, document the diet, because as conditions change, you might be able to tie some of those changes into the things that a patient is either doing or not doing.
Correct. The last condition, pneumonia, I think everyone understands and knows the reasons of this. It can be bacterial infection, a viral infection. There are many issues as it relates to pneumonia.
And this is also an issue of inflammation of lungs. So like COPD, right. it's a lung disorder.
So, you know, again, we know what some of the symptoms are, fever, chills, cough. What do we do out in the home based upon the client coming in? One of the things is keeping the client mobile, very similar to a heart condition. Keeping them mobile, it improves the blood circulation. Believe it or not, it improves secretion clearance and reduces the severity of the situation. So, again, exercise in this case.
Yeah, one thing that a lot of people don't know is that a client's mouth should be rinsed frequently with water to minimize contamination of the body systems. And that's something that can be documented and should be documented in that personal health record. And, you know, maybe this is not something that goes on for months and months and months, but certainly that those first 30 days out of the hospital, it's critical to document that stuff and get into a habit of doing something that is going to promote good health in your loved one.
And in general, and again, we got to be careful because there could be complicating situations that you don't want to do this, but encouraging in someone who has pneumonia, encouraging them to drink fluids is always good. That thins. It allows the mucus to be coughed and expelled easier. And encouraging the client to cough based upon no other complications. That opens up the airways and gets the secretions to move and helps in the exchange of the gases.
And once somebody's had pneumonia, it could make them more susceptible to having it again. And so it's critical that the client is encouraged to get proper amount of rest, keep eating that healthy diet, you know, exercise, and then just follow universal precautions. Every caregiver, whether professional or family caregiver, should follow universal precautions to avoid reinfection. So washing your hands frequently. You know, keeping people that have colds or other kinds of illnesses away from the frail, but just paying attention to simple things can really keep people a lot healthier.
And these are the things that caregivers, whether it's a family member, whether it's a professional caregiver, we have to now be aware of. We become the caregiver in the home becomes an integral part in the not only prevention, but the delivery of care. And so what at Griswold, what we are attempting to do, we are interfacing with our providers, be it skilled home care services or hospitals. And at the designated point where they direct us, we are interfacing with them. We are training our caregivers in these arenas. We are having our caregivers to document very, very diligently what they see on a daily, hourly basis. And we are instructing our caregivers to communicate with the skilled provider, communicate with the loved ones, communicate with the home office. That is the essence of preventative and managed care, communication between all the entities.
And we just want to kind of wrap up with just another charge to take care of your loved ones, to pay attention to what's going on. As you follow the guidelines that we've just gone over, there may be a tendency to say, well, everything's fine. We're beyond the danger zone. And it's really critical that these suggestions that we've made, become habit and become a lifestyle. So, you know, proper nutrition and proper exercise and proper rest. And, you know, left to oneself, sometimes you don't always follow that. I mean, even we as healthy adults have a tendency to not exercise like we should, not eat like we should, get a little bit lazy with respect to that, get too busy, not get enough sleep. And all those things are going to contribute to potentially putting your loved one back in the hospital. And, you know, the critical thing for us is, you know, of course we want hospitals not to be penalized for readmits, but more importantly, we want our clients to be safe and healthy and happy in their homes, because at the end of the day, that's really what's important.
At the end of the day, it's about a quality of life. And if you affect positively the quality of life, everything else falls into place. Obviously, the home environment does, the readmissions, the dollars, everything falls into place if you are properly managing the quality of life.
And then remember, if you start to see these warning signs, make a call. Make a phone call to somebody, whether it's your doctor or your home health company or even your home care company. Make that call. Get some attention so that you can keep that engine from seizing, keep your loved one out of the hospital. So,
well, that's it. That's our Griswold's program for care transitions, which we call Secure Care. We thank you for, and I said that wrong, Secure Transitions. Brad just threw the title, his title at me, his name of our program, Secure Transitions. We thank you for listening in. We certainly want you to be attentive to these issues. If you have questions or if you need to discuss this with someone, please feel free to get in touch with us and we can lead you to the right source. We want to remind our listening audience that they can listen to the rebroadcast of today's show at eugeriaradio.com. And as we always close, we want to say that if the youth of this nation is its greatest national resource, it goes without saying that the seniors of this nation is its greatest national treasure. Thank you and God bless.
Eugeria Radio is sponsored by Griswold Special Care and broadcast live from the Business Radio X studios.